Blog Talk Radio.
I ain't got nothing but three things to say about that.
Welcome to Loving the Skin You're In Radio. I'm your host, Andrea Amador, best known as the Juicy Woman. Today's June 12th, 2013. As a certified empowerment coach, author, speaker, and body image self-esteem expert, and curvy and confident woman, I'm here to share my expertise with you and teach you how to bust out of body shame so that you can love the skin you're in. What's that mean to you? It means it's all about helping you to change your perspective, the way you see things. In this case, I want to encourage curvy women to see themselves as beautiful, fabulous, and capable. Because living in our thin is in society, all too many times curvy gals end up feeling like they have to apologize for their bodies. And this show is the antidote to that kind of thinking. Want to know more about how to change your thoughts and see what's coming next on the show? Just visit my Facebook page at facebook.com/thejuicywoman and click on like to join the group. You can also get tips and more by following me on Twitter as well, at thejuicywoman. And if you missed any of the episodes of this show, you can catch all the archived audios for this show at blogtalkradio.com/the-juicy-woman. Last September, I was invited to attend Plus Night Out, and it was such an amazing event that it completely changed the way that I look at plus-size fashion. One of the people I met there, she made such a powerful impression on me. Her name is Catherine Schuller. Catherine is an icon in the full-figured fashion industry, and I am so lucky that she is my guest this evening. Let me tell you a little bit about her. Gosh, Catherine's status is legendary as a leader in the field and a pioneer of the full-figure fashion industry. In 2011, she was awarded the Icon of the Industry Award during Full-Figured Fashion Week. She first became a Ford model in the 80s when the industry was just about forming and soon after took next steps to move on to film and theater. At some point, she was told, can you believe this? At 5'10", 175 pounds, that she was too heavy to model. Well, she said, to hell with you. And she parlayed her creative talents and created and performed her own sketch comedy cabaret act, The Nerve. Passionate about empowering women at every turn, Catherine became a powerful advocate for teaching women how to have confidence and style and express themselves no matter what. After joining the prestigious Association of Image Consultants International and specializing in the plus-size customer and moving from Parsons School of Design to creating business partnerships and conducting fashion workshops and commentating fashion shows around the U.S. Oh my gosh, Catherine has been a spokesperson for retail brands such as Talbot's Woman, Just My Size, Dillard's, Nordstrom, Saks, Filene's, Macy's, Lane Bryant, Catherine's, and Figure Magazine, and so many others. She's a media darling. She's often seen in the news, and she's appeared in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, Orlando Sentinel, St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the Daily News, the Times, Pittsburgh Post, Chicago's Windy City, Good Housekeeping, The View, The Early Show, The Today Show. When she decided to self-publish her highly acclaimed how-to modeling book, The Ultimate Plus-Size Modeling Guide, she became the go-to person for advice on model development. And today, she leads her company, Model Mentors, teaching up-and-coming models all the secrets they need to know to succeed in the industry. From being a Ford model, editor of Vogue, mode, sorry about that, editor of Vogue executed Mode magazine and designing her own fashion line for QVC to image consulting, model mentoring, and creating a curvy cooperative to power up the plus-size community, Catherine knows how to make curvy women look and feel fabulous. And I am absolutely thrilled to pieces to introduce Catherine Schuller. Catherine, thank you so much for being here with me.
Well, I'm thrilled to be here, and thank you for that stellar and concise bounced out of my 25 years in the industry.
There is so much more, and that's all the good stuff we're going to talk about. I think you're a rock star.
Well, thank you. I feel like one after that.
Yeah, you absolutely are. You have to tell us, how did it all start?
It started from really being quite angry about the way I was getting treated in the entertainment business, to tell you the truth. I mean, you don't get mad, you get even. And I thought, you know, who are they telling me I'm not worthy of being a performer because I don't fit some conformist idea about what an entertainer should look like? So, you know, I went over to Ford, and, you know, I was waiting there for the woman to come out, and she came down, looked at my book, she slammed it, put it in my face and said, "You're too heavy," and she turned on her heels and she walked out. And I went back crestfallen, and I said, "Oh my God, all right." So that's what started me on this eating disorder that has gripped my life for about 3 to 4 years. Whenever I had a role that I was going up for, I would go away to a fasting farm and lose 14 pounds. And it really messed up my metabolism. And, you know, finally I got to the point where I was just so sick and tired of being sick and tired that I said, enough of this. And I started the group The Nerve, and lo and behold, irony of ironies, I'm on stage. I go back the backstage area, and there was an agent there from Ford, and she said, "Do you want a plus size model?" And I said, "Do you want to write?" Because I was so angry about the modeling world, and I said, "You know, I'm not going to diet anymore." And she said, "No." I said, "Plus size modeling." And I said, "Well, that's an oxymoron I haven't heard of." So she said, "You don't have to lose an ounce. In fact, you may have to pad up." And I said, "Okay, well, I'm in." And so I went down, and I went one floor above where that woman was. And I said to them, why did they tell me that there wasn't a special size division right above where I was 3 years ago? And she said, "Oh, she didn't want to offend you." And I said, that is crazy. It was more offensive to tell me at 175 pounds that I wasn't fit and fabulous and fierce and go away than it was to say, you know, upstairs there's a special vision that's starting in the industry. You may want to check that out. And, you know, that's the kind of unconscious thinking that was going on in those days. And, you know, people wanted you to lose weight. They didn't care if you took Dexedrine and chewed your lips off and got hit by a bus, as long as you lost the 40 or 50 pounds and sewed up thin. And that's what made me realize that there's got to be some kind of a balance here, that there's got to be a healthy, fit way to live that you're happy with and you can live with. And once I made peace with that, I found that I was becoming a role model for other women who weren't happy with being pigeonholed.
Now,
you know,
what's it
and that,
like
that's
in,
what happened.
Yeah. What's it like in terms of the distinction between plus modeling versus straight modeling? What is the mindset? How does it differ with the plus model? Are they struggling with eating disorders? Are they, you know, dealing with insecurities? Or are they just full out and fabulous?
Well, the straight size world, God, I mean, they're 5'10", 115 pounds, and they eat, and, you know, some of them do. But the agencies don't want.
Oh, Catherine, I'm losing you here.
They want freaks of nature. Yeah? Can you hear me? They want freaks of nature. Yeah, they want freaks of nature. They want people who show up skinny, stay skinny, and don't have any other contours on their body. So that's not us. And the distinction is that we are a new norm. We're the new diversity. We are an innovative way that people can show a beautiful, healthy lifestyle. And I think that's what we started to see changing, and that we represent that it's okay to be average, normal, beautiful, curvy, diverse. And I'm all about making this full-figured woman a plus-size icon in her own right.
Oh, absolutely. It's so important to do that. Tell me, how did you get started with all of the fashion and doing the runway shows and all that amazingly cool stuff, designing for Winona Judd and, yeah, wow.
Well, I actually, when I was kind of phasing out of modeling, I started to go to Parsons School of Design and take courses. And I took different art courses, different pattern making courses, different, you know, related, illustrated courses, you know, whatever. I was just kind of amusing myself and trying to find out what the next step would be. And lo and behold, I discovered this image consulting program. And when I started to take those courses, I said, oh, my God, this is what the plus-size woman needs to know. She needs to know applied fashion. She needs to know what she is, and then how best to capitalize on that, not to transform herself into something that she can't possibly achieve. And that's what was appealing about it, because I learned about body type and silhouette and coloration and being yourself and loving yourself and finding clothing and, you know, working on your appearance from where you were at that moment, not changing it in any way, but transforming it through good, better, best choices. So that excited me, and I started to work with Sue Nanfeld, and she wrote a book called Plus Style, The Plus Size Guide to Looking Great. And we partnered with our first company called Emerging Visions Enterprises, and that was our first foray into putting it out there. And I just the media kit said all about Eve, because Emerging Visions Enterprises was Eve, and I thought, I want my press kit to be all about Eve, because Eve wasn't a size 6. So we created this company, and we put some proposals out there to different retailers, because I had already been, because I had modeled, and they asked me to do some commentating at one of the department stores, and I said, yeah, I'm an old stand-up. I had an act called The Nerve, and I grabbed the microphone, and I said, you know, this is great, because I'm not making people laugh about things in society so much as I'm having them laugh about the fact that we're all different and how funny it is that this whole exists, you know, the absurdity of it all. So it was just like, make them laugh about what they're wearing. So it became an interesting kind of segue for me to marry that fashion stand-up and modeling world into my workshop. And so we started to market it to the retailers, and she wrote the book, and I wrote a guide on modeling, and then lo and behold, Mode started. So Mode was the Vogue-executed really high fashion magazine that existed from 1997 to 2001. And during that time, I did Mode on the Road. So I was the liaison between the retailers and the advertising pages, and I brought the editorials to life in the department stores. So I met every department store on the road and put together fashion shows and did workshops with them. And it was just, you know, it was a really great time, because it was able to, I was able to marry all of the different aspects of my career up to that point into one large pot and take it on the road and really have a lot of success with it. And that's when retailers and people started to hire me to actually come and cut the ribbons and, you know, kiss the babies and do a lot of one-on-one seminars with women and then take fashion image stuff that I had learned at Parsons and then apply it to helping women with their own personal wardrobes. So it was a natural progression for me, and I suddenly realized that, you know, and I kind of knew how to put it together, but there are a lot of people who were still in fashion kindergarten because there weren't that many resources for the full-figured woman, and she was basically wearing pull-on pants and big camp shirts and tent dresses. And then suddenly all these designers were coming on board, and she was confused. So yeah. I think when I started modeling, there was 150 designers. There were 2,000 designers by the time Mode closed its doors in 2001. So that was quite a jump.
That was quite a jump, but definitely there were still so many designers who were not on board, who were against plus-size fashion. What's the thinking behind that? I don't get it, because from a marketing standpoint, it makes no sense to reject like 70% of a population. What is that about?
Well, you would think. I mean, it sort of makes no sense. The money's on the table. But they feel that, A, it may jeopardize their straight-size customers seeing plus-size women in their clothing, which is crap. But that's their thinking. I mean, I went up to, you know, a designer and said, why aren't you in plus sizes? And she said, I do. I go up to 14. And at that time, she was opening boutiques in Hong Kong. And I said to myself, of course she wants little Asian dolls who are size 2 in her clothes. She doesn't want women who are size 18, 20, 24, 22, you know, really kind of bastardizing her brand. And they also didn't do their homework, didn't do the specs, licensed it out. It came back looking like Drek on toast points, and it wasn't selling. And then they blamed us because we weren't buying it. So they didn't take the kind of care that was needed. And another big area that was missing was the petite woman, because the whole country is 5'4 and 150 pounds. Still is, still was, and they weren't getting addressed or dressed, and none of the designers were doing their homework on that. So, you know, it was just a big crapshoot. The one thing was that I was the fit model for Liz Claiborne, and I saw those three column dresses that came out with all those details and a great fabric and wonderful colors, and I said, Liz Claiborne is the one to do it, because she was the very first designer to come into the industry. And in probably a year, her sales increased 14%. So that was enough to encourage some of the other designers to come on board. But they have to do it properly. They have to do different specs. They have to put the time in and really understand what's going on with the different bodies and the differentials, the bust, the waist. They have, yes, we have curves. Sorry, we're not, you know, 5'10 and 119-pound clothes racks that hang from the shoulders. We have hips. We have different curves. We have ways that we, you know, we want to have that accentuated. And we're not all shaped like refrigerators. We're not all blocky. We're not all blobby. They just think we're like, we want to wear tents and floats and, you know, those are for parades. Kick them to the curb. We need stuff with, you know, design quality to it, garment construction. And the designers who really pay attention to that, Dana Buchman, when she first came into the field, oh my gosh, that was an amazing designer. She did it right.
I remember the first time I picked up Mode magazine, I was in Elaine Bryant, and once I started leafing through the pages, I was so blown away at how spot on and how beautiful the pieces were. And I couldn't believe it when I went back another time and they said, oh, sorry, we don't have it anymore. You know, Mode is out of business. I was heartbroken. What is that about? What happened?
Well, what happened was 9/11 happened, actually. We were getting bought by Berta because there was an investor named Freedom LLC, which is a little Canadian investor. And really, that magazine cost $50,000 a month to be able to put out properly.
Really?
And they were crushed by that kind of need. But yet, when I started on board, it was 200,000 subscribers. It went to 800,000 subscribers. They thought that each magazine was probably read five times because it was hoarded and scarce. And we had a 4 million person readership. That's not too shabby. But we couldn't sustain it because Freedom LLC just merely did not have the capital. However, Berta, which is its German publication, was going to buy it. And the ink, and when those buildings came, they sold it and put it all, everything on the back burner and said, we're just going to wait. And so that's what happened. And we couldn't wait because $50,000 a month, we couldn't afford it. So they decided to close while they were still in the black, and that's what happened. And then, you know, the printing cost skyrocketed, and then the Internet came on board, and everybody went online. So there was no real need for a printed publication anymore, although I still feel there is. But that's, you know, another discussion, because paper is so expensive, and everybody's now going from paper to, you know, Kindle and Nooks and all that, and,
yeah,
and iPads. And that's probably where we're going to wind up, you know, finding our the happy medium. But that's what happened. And the perception was that this plus-size woman couldn't sustain a magazine. Far from it. It closed because it was too popular. It was too expensive. It got too grandiose, and we couldn't sustain it. And, you know, we needed Berta to step in. But 9/11 happened. So, again, another casualty of that whole incident.
Yeah. What I'm seeing as I go through your bio is this consistent, you know, rising up from the ashes. Every time, you know, something goes south, bam, you pick up and you move on and you create something amazing. It's this reinvention that you have, this ability to keep on coming back stronger and stronger and stronger. How did you go from Mode and, you know, all that happened with 9/11? Did you have any personal losses with 9/11?
Well, the thing that everybody started to look to me to be the person to save the industry, you know, people were calling me, what's going on, what's going on? And everybody was taking a wait-and-see attitude because that happened in September. So from September to December, nothing was going on in the industry. So people were calling me and calling me. So I said, you know what, this is the time to do a runway show. And so I started Curve Style because people like Yves Saint Laurent's stylist was out of work, all the photographers from Paris and Italy, everybody needed a platform. And I said, well, let me start, you know, another entity. So I was calling it 14 plus on 6. So it was 7th on 6. I was going to do this runway show that kind of mimicked the things that were going on in the tents. And I finally got to Fern Malice, who said, don't use any part of on 6. Or I'll sue you. And 7th on 6th became Mercedes-Benz Fashion Week, and I had to change it, so I changed it to Curve Style Reshaping Fashion, did a big event at the Puck Building, but again, it was before the Internet, so I had about 750 people attend that, but I went to new designers, I had a Rising Star Award, and I was going to continue that, but I got all this work because of I was seen as kind of the salvation or whatever of the industry, and I got offered the media spokesperson position for Charming Shops. So I again went on the road, did the morning shows, pulled events, hired models, you know, did seminars at all of their different stores for Catherine's plus size brand. So I did that for about 8 years and didn't really have time to do anything again. So that's kind of what happened with Curve Style, but it was a gold standard of the industry. I don't think we still have that yet because it was new designers, brand new designers, high end designers, and full figured fashion week is wonderful, but it's still pretty much a moderate priced, and it's sponsored by Fancy, which is a great brand, but you know, it's not Dolce & Gabbana, it's not those kind of designers that are worthy of being included in Fashion Week. So I think there still needs to be a runway show for plus sizes that happens during Fashion Week.
I agree. I don't understand the rationale behind why they can't share. Why can't we all go under the same tent together? What's that about?
I know. Well, I think it has to do with the fact that in order to be accepted in Fashion Week, you have to be jury rostered, and your business has to, you know, have been in, you know, have certain success and also have a certain look to it. And we just don't have that designer look. We really don't. There are no designers who have that, who are willing to show. I mean, you could say Michael Kors and Calvin Klein have plus size brands, but there's just not that inclusion on the runway. And I said to Fern Malice, who, you know, I had the meeting with her, and she told me to cease and desist on the 14 plus on 6. I said, oh, so we just get to wear tents. We don't get to be under them. And she, and I said, there's my old stand-up routine coming back. But she said, it's not going to happen right now. Well, when now? When are we going to have it happen? But what saved us was the Fashions Night Out started, and then Giovanna Reyes did the Plus Night Out. So I jumped on board with that, and that's why you met me there doing those fashion shows, because we got so much press from doing it during Fashion Week. That's when the media is in town. That's when the fashion media is in town. But Full Figure Fashion Week doesn't really need to put their head on that chopping block, because they're not going to get any kind of reaction, because they are too much of a moderate brand, unfortunately. And that's kind of where we're at right now, is kind of still having to toot our own horn and not being able to walk on the same runway as other designers, because it's not a designer. I mean, Lane Bryant, God bless them, but they're a vendor. You know, they are a manufacturer. They do private label, but they don't manufacture. They don't design so much as go to other labels and other manufacturers and have them design stuff and put their label on it. So it's really a whole different concept. And you have to be a designer in order to get into Full Figured Fashion, and to get into Mercedes-Benz Fashion Week. And that's a distinction.
So what are you seeing that women want? What are some of the trends that you're hearing that women are asking for?
They want the same thing as straight size women want, but they want it to be appropriate for their body type and for the proportions. They want the great, skirt. They want a pencil skirt. They want a fabulous, wonderfully cut jacket. They want all the same trends, but they want to wear them appropriate to their body type. And that's one of the things that I think, as an image consultant, I can go between the manufacturers, the designers, and the customers and inform everybody about what's right for them. Part of the reason why you see so many different body types within a collection is because I created this thing called Shape Shopping with Figure and Fit, and I told people in 1993, you have got to put more than just an oval body type into the mix. We have waistlines. We have bust lines. Yes, we have curves. We are shaped, and I say, know your shape, show your shape. It's not know your shape, hide your shape. And that's what they kind of think that we want to cover up. And I say, no, we want to complement. So I've been part and parcel to those different body types being translated into the same garments. And we all want to look very trendy and hot and have garments that really show off our curves. I say, ride your curves, don't hide your curves. So that's one of the things that you have to get it right. You can't wear clothes too big, cover up. Otherwise, you look big. You can't wear them too tight. You can't. You look like you're exploding out of your clothes. You have to get that ease. I say more ease, less squeeze. You have to get that ease in your garment that comes from understanding your body type and then what's out there and how it's reflected in the choices you make and the garments that you take into that dressing room. They're going to complement your curves, not cover them up.
How does it work as an image consultant? Do you go shopping with your client? And what are some do's and don'ts that you would recommend? Can you say any hard and fast rules, or is it all case-by-case basis?
Well, I kind of do it case-by-case, but one thing you have to know, and you can know your color, you can know your budget, the occasion, you have to know your figure type. That is one thing that's crucial, because when you're taking those garments in, it could look great on you, but not on me. It could look great on your mom, but not on your aunt. And it has to translate into, where are my differentials? Where are my curves? What am I going to wear? And how's that going to translate best for me? And so I do a needs assessment before I even take anyone shopping, because I'm not a cookie cutter type image consultant. I'm not a cookie cutter type stylist. I want you to discover your own personal style, how you live your life, what your clothes are saying about you, what you need to do, and also what your body type is, what your shape is, and how all those things should factor into it. Then you can have a field day. And I say shopping is a process of elimination, not consideration. You can't try everything on. You have to take in 10 garments that are going to work smashingly, ideally best on your body type. And then you say, oh, I feel like I'm on a waistline excavation mission every time I go into the dressing room with a client. I said, you are Bud Vaughn in a refrigerator box. You see, you have face. I mean, you're covering up all this because you don't want to show your tummy, because your bust is huge. Come on, let's take it down a notch, and let's find something that's going to work for you and kick it to the curb. Those clothes are not doing you any good. You're not finding your curves. So that's one of the things that I do with them. I sit there and I show them what their body types are and what their style is, and because style is being yourself on purpose. So I help people find out what their purpose is. And they try things on that they never would have before, because they're sitting in a judgmental stance. And I say to people, what's your shape? And they say, oh, I'm big. I said, that's a judgment. That's not a shape.
Yeah.
Do you hear
yeah.
what you're saying? That's a judgment. Oh, okay. So, you know, they're self-deprecating. Okay, I get it. But You're negating the fact that you have a waistline, or you have, you know, a beautiful arch in your back that we can complement there. Yeah, okay, you have a tummy, not the end of the world. So I don't do that much closet, you know, assessment and all that, because I feel like I'm just going to find a lot of the same stuff that's getting them in a rut. But I go with them, and I go and get maybe 10 great items, get them a brand new wardrobe, and I have 30% off wherever I go. I have showrooms that give me merchandise for a many discounts. So actually hiring an image consultant saves you so much time and dollars, because you get their discount, you get their advice, and you're not shopping, and buying the wrong things. I do a cost per wearing thing. Yes, that jacket may cost $200, but you take it out of your closet 5 times, you clean it, you dry clean it, you wash it, wear it, you love it, you look great. What's that come down to? $1.50 a day? You know, you're worth that. So you have to do that kind of cost per wearing, as opposed to the garment you found on the bargain, bin, and it's got a $50 tag on it, and you never wear it. What's the cost per wearing for that garment? It's, you know, there's tons of people tons of clients with all these clothes with tags on them that they've never worn, or it's an 80-20 thing. You wear 20% of your wardrobe and 80% of it is still hanging unused in your wardrobe. So I work a lot with closet clearers and organizers. So they do, after we start shopping, and then on a regular basis start shopping and do more mileage building wardrobe building ideas, they then start to do the closets with them. And I've done lots of work with them, and I'm happy to farm that out. And then at the end, they have things they love that they wear that make them happy, and they have a place for them. And that's key.
What are some of the stories of working with your clients? At what point do they come to you?
Well, as an image consultant, you get gain weight, lose weight, divorce, career transition, all the different, you know, places that people are at where they're just tired of, like, the image that they have and they want to bump it up. But it seems like a lot has to do with the way they felt about themselves and the way they want to get to. So I do a kind of an assessment where I say, okay, here's a piece of paper on the left-hand side. I want to say what you're moving away from, and what you're moving towards. And you see
wow.
that it's not just about the clothes, but it's about self-expression, and it's about where you want to go. And I do treasure mapping, and I start, you know, cutting things out of magazines and make a big, huge collage about everything they love, from a flower vacation spot to their grandchildren, boyfriend, whatever. I find their life, and then we dress them for that. And I do goals and personality and what you need your wardrobe to do. And so I that's why I'm not a cookie cutter image consultant. And then we go shopping, and they know their shape, they know their figure type, and they know you know what their clothes are going to be doing. A lot of people come to me. I think one last who seen operations on her leg, and she was really conscientious about all the scarring on her leg, and she was very, very tall. She was about 6'2". And she never felt good about her body, but she had tickets to the Olympics. And she was going to go over there with a smashing wardrobe. She's been invited to all these parties. So I did, that was one of my most amazing days, because I showed her how beautiful she was. And she got a whole capsule wardrobe that she could use and pack and, you know, take over there for the full 2 weeks that she was going to be there. She just wrote me an amazing letter that just thanked me, and she said, "I knew I chose the right person when I chose you, and you understand me." And that's what makes my job so rewarding, because it's not just about clothes. It's really about transforming people and allowing that self-expression, and they feel beautiful. And I don't just stop at the wardrobe, too. I do hair and makeup, because that's an awful lot to ask of a dress, right?
Yes,
I do some hair and makeup and some accessories, and you know, we just you know, and I have a little wardrobe chart where I teach them, okay, what else can you do with this jacket? What else can you wear with it? What skirt can you pair with it? What bottoms can you do with it? What tops can you do to dress it up or down? And you can see how much mileage you can get out of that item. So it's
wow.
a, you know, kind of a needs assessment, and I can see that you know it's very rewarding for the person, because they feel so honored, valued, and transformed.
I'm just blown away by the volume of work and your accomplishments. I'm wondering how this affected you on a personal level. How was your health? Were you doing well? Were you having a hard time with your health? Because
well,
I know at one point you had a health scare.
Yes, I did have a health scare. But you
know, gotta talk about
general,
that.
So.
But I mean, I'm seeing
yeah.
a huge volume of work. You're going all
I
over
know.
The place. It's amazing. You're like a rocket.
Well,
one of the
things that I did was I was a core founding member of this charity called Diabetic, which is for women who are living with affected by or at risk of diabetes. And I felt after a while that I was getting slammed for promoting obesity, and that it helped tamper it when I had a health concern that I was partnered with. And because 80% of diabetics are plus size, it made it a lot easier for me to do that transition and have that as an adjunct. But the executive director, Max Vedic, had been Luther Vandross's personal assistant, and when Luther died of a diabetic stroke, he found out about it in the emergency room, and that Luther diabetes was that bad. But he said, "I vow at this moment never, never, never to have that happen again, and I want to inform everyone." So he went to the tribute. Patti LaBelle was there, and he said, "Oh my God, she's not a diabetic, because she's diabetic. She's a diva-betic." And so the V in diabetic stood for Luther Vandross's name and made it like a diva. And I said, "If it's perfect, Max, if it's diva, you have to have a diva attitude. Don't get down, get diva. Be a diva about
oh,
your diabetes."
So true.
Yeah. And so that's what I was doing. I've done that for the last 6 years, and I've done a Makeover Your Diabetes tour, and I am the Glamour Fearless station, and I use my Figure and Fit tape shopping with that whole entity. And don't you know, on World Diabetes Day, lo and behold, I had a stroke. So I was paralyzed on the right-hand side of my body, and I couldn't go to World Diabetes Day. I had to go to the hospital, and I had to learn to walk again. And it's not what happens to you. It's your attitude towards it, though, Andrea. Yeah. So I had the best care, and I encourage anyone, if they have any kind of suspicion about anything that's different on their body, go to the hospital immediately, because you have only 3 hours to get that TPA, which is tissue plasminogen activator. You only have 3 hours to get that. And if you don't get that, it spreads to other parts of your brain and takes out more and more faculties. So I was just lucky that it landed on the right-hand side mobility part of my brain. But I just encourage everyone to just, learn the facts about a stroke, that you can have a stroke and you can come back, and you can come back stronger. And it's not the scary thing that it needs to be. And it isn't, thank goodness that I did, I bike every day, I work out, and I eat properly. That stroke was just congenital, and I didn't have the kind of complications that I could have had my health not been where it was, and I was able to bounce back. So that's the part that when you have something happen to you in your 40s and 50s that, compromises you, you don't want those complications to set in because you didn't take care of your body. And you can fight it. You can walk again and talk again and get back up on your bike and, have the life that you had, as long as you've been taking care of yourself and really, really pay attention to every single day what you're eating, what you put in your mouth. Be sugar savvy. Eat like you're going to get diabetes. I think this whole country should eat like they're going to get diabetes. And then we wouldn't be in the crisis that we're in today, because it's really occupied sugar as far as I'm concerned. It's not we're obese and, oh, we're obese, we can't control ourselves. It's been done to us. And, the food we eat is manipulated, and it is manufactured and packaged and done to addict us to it. So I'm out to break that whole cycle. And if you can just take your health back, it's an issue that I'm very passionate about. And you don't have to go for, oh, I have to lose 40 pounds, I have to lose 50 pounds, go on Nutrisystem or whatever those packaged foods are. Just eat more vegetables, more fruit, a balanced diet, and don't eat any crap, which is just calories recycled at processing.
It's true. I was amazed when I heard that two slices of bread just turn straight into sugar in the body. Just whole wheat bread, yep. Whole grain bread that, years ago the doctors were saying, oh, whole grain, eat more whole grains. It's all the same. It's because the grain is, as you said, so manufactured and so fake that our bodies just don't know what in the world to do with it, and it turns to pure sugar. So
what's worse is that the additives, like high fructose corn syrup, the body doesn't even recognize that stuff. When you eat a meal, insulin is released into your body, and it helps uptake the sugar into your cells. Okay, when that's working well, that works. Then your brain releases leptin, which tells you, okay, you're full, stop eating. Guess what gets short-circuited with high fructose corn syrup? That whole cycle, the insulin, the leptin, your body doesn't know when to stop, and that's why you get addicted. And once you realize that, it's not your fault that it's the food that you're eating. It's not even food. It's the stuff you're eating. And when you go back to a more natural, as opposed to raw as you possibly can, that's really the and that's delicious too. I don't want all those additives in my food. I want delicious, natural, as close to raw food as I possibly can have. So that's my mission,
well,
is to educate people on diabetes.
Once you start moving out and stop eating the foods that are continually creating that kind of cycle in the body, you start craving the whole foods, which is like magical.
Yep.
It's fabulous.
And you don't even have to crave them. It is not really a craving. You just want them. I mean,
I say
eat what you want. I just want to change what you want.
Yes, it's a preference. It's true.
Right. And you have to make that conscious choice.
Maker. Yes, yes. Model maker mentors. Tell me about that.
Well, it's a kind of a natural progression because having modeled and having written the Ultimate Plus Size Modeling Guide, I go to conventions, I speak, I lecture, I do seminars on putting your best look forward, how to get into the modeling world. And if you've modeled, everybody, that's the one question you get. How do you get into modeling? And it is a confusing maze to try and figure out. So I figured, I want to be the person I wish I had met when I first moved to New York. So I started this entity, which bypasses 8 months of confusion and shows you how to put your look together, how to market it, and then how to gain some modicum of success right out of the gate. So you don't get frustrated and you're not scratching your head about how do I break into modeling? And I don't take people who don't have potential. I take the models who really have potential to really make something of themselves. And that's quite a number of people. It's just that I'm not that type of agency that I'll just take anybody and blow smoke up their butt. You're going to have a modeling career. Here, give me $12,000. Mm-hmm. No, I believe in, if models prove to me that they have what it takes, the five P's, perseverance, personality, proportion, being photogenic, and you do really have what it takes, I will help you. And that's what spurs the model maker mentor thing.
I remember when I was at the casting, listening to you, you were talking about how it's so important to be a blank canvas. None of the nose rings, none of the tattoos. It's just not something that the traditional Talbots or, Boston is.
Yep. For an using modeling as an alternative lifestyle, it's really not all that alternative because, you're pretty much, you have to keep it very, so that you're a blank canvas that a client can write what they want on you. And if you have a tattoo blazoned across your chest, a lot of designers aren't going to go through that.
That
if you have red hair that's shaved on one side, you're an individual, and yes, you're expressing yourself, but it's not going to be employable. It's not going to be something that people are going to want to buy. You're a package. A model is a package, and you are selling garments on your body. People are using your body to, show people how their garments look on someone, and they want you pretty much so that they can manipulate you. If they want a tattoo on your chest, believe me, they'll hire an entire squadron of people to paint that tattoo on you, and then you can wash it off.
Uh-huh. What are some of the challenges that you've met with models? On the runway, they look so strong and so confident. What happens when the hair comes off, the nails come off, the wigs come off, the weave, whatever the case may be?
The plus size model is probably the realest, most down-to-earth model that's currently working today. The straight size models, they're pretty freaks, but there's not a whole lot that they've had to prove. And I'm thinking about such a pretty face. You'd be so great if you just lost 70 pounds. Right? Haven't we heard that? And the plus size models have actually bucked that. And it's like, I don't need to lose weight. I can be a normal, healthy, 70 pounds over the insurance chart woman and still make money. And it's almost like thumb your nose at the industry. So I think that the plus size models are some of the most well-adjusted, beautiful examples of, getting it right. I'm so thrilled that the industry continues to grow and that we have such, you know, amazing role models. I mean, Curvy Girls show. I mean, Rosie Mercado is a good size 24, and
that's,
you know,
right. I'm just going to talk about her. Yeah,
and she puts it out there, and she talks about how, well, maybe she wants to reduce her hips a little bit, but you know what? She's not going to stop living today, you know, and that's what you have to say. What about today?
That's right. So what is the Curvy Cooperative?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's because beauty is a plus. That's my tagline. I feel that we have to get together. You know, there's a lot of bifurcation. There's a lot of factionalism. There's a lot of separation in this industry right now, and I don't understand why. Like, you don't understand why the Mercedes-Benz Fashion Week won't allow us on the runway. I don't understand why we can't all get together and capitalize on each other's strengths instead of thinking that someone just owns the industry. You know, I just really feel like we really need to be there, help support each other. I do something, you do something, let's get it all together. And that's the only reason, that's the only way we're going to grow. And we've got to lay down the gauntlet and stop the backbiting and stop the, I own this part of the industry and you can't do this and I do it better than you. And no, we're all about working together. And that's the only way I can really come at it. I just feel like I collaborate well and I work well with others and I can't do it alone. And I really feel like that's the lesson takeaway from that. The Curvy Cooperative should be us together working as a curvy community.
What advice do you have for the woman who's frustrated with her weight? She doesn't know what in the hell kind of figure she has. She just knows she hates her body and nothing fits and she wants to hide and use her clothes to do it. What advice do you have for her?
Call me. I
How
can't really
can get
explain
in touch
it.
With you? Yeah.
I can't explain it because once you get my needs assessment and once you get in touch with the fact that you're different but you're special, that there are things out there for you, that you're stopping yourself because your belief is stopping yourself, it's not the truth. The belief is not the truth. But if I could show you and hold a mirror up to you, no pun intended, about who you really are and how you can best capitalize on that, I'm telling you, it really changes lives. So I say to them, know yourself, know your shape, show your shape. Ride your curves, don't hide your curves. Cling, cinch, and hide, you just look wide. Skim, hug your drape, and you show your shape. And that's what it comes down to, is getting clothes that you love but also love you back. And feeling good about yourself and really understanding the appropriateness of maybe your age or your career or what you want your clothes to do, and then finding those gems. You don't have to spend a fortune, but finding those gems that really make you feel amazing. And, you know, that's it.
Wow, Catherine, such beautiful advice. I'm just blown away. You are a whirlwind of talent and accomplishment and fabulousness. So how can people get in touch with you? Really, I think you're fabulous.
I think you're fabulous, too. And let's just get on that Curvy Cooperative bandwagon because I thank you so much for coming to my class and speaking. I teach this class called The Long and the Short of It. It's Petites and Plus, and I teach it at FIT. It's the first plus-size course that I've ever had in the history of that FIT school. I mean, it just blows me away. But you came and gave an inspirational message to my students who are all budding image consultants, fashion stylists, and people working with people who are outside the norm. And I never knew your story. That's what's so great about this, is that these platforms, we can tell our stories. We can, you know, inspire and also influence. So I'm not so much into, oh, all right, great. But what's that going to do for you? How are you going to take what you learned from my life and apply it to what you can do for yourself? And, you know, change something, change it, you know, and transform it and be empowered by it. And out there, I mean, we could put a rocket ship on the moon for all the problems that we've roiled on over the years, right, Andrea?
It's so true.
So please, I have a cell phone, and I'm glad to get it out. It's 917-375-0731. You can also email me at katschuler1@gmail.com, and I answer my emails all day long, all night long. I'm prompt, and also I have a Facebook page, and you can friend me on there. I have like 3,000 friends, and I'll gladly add you to that. And I'm, you know, working hard on some new projects. And, you know, hopefully it will better the industry in its entirety, and we'll all be on board working together and, you know, profiting from it monetarily
yes.
and emotionally.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much, Catherine. You have been
You're welcome, Andrea.
I love it. Have a great night.
All right. I'll talk to you later. Keep in touch.
Okay,
bye, everybody.
You.
Bye.
Wow. What an amazing lady Catherine is. She blows me away. What she talks about is reinventing yourself and changing the way that you see yourself. And I want to take a moment and share with you a couple of offerings that I have for you in the same vein. What I do, as I've mentioned before, is I teach a technique called Emotional Freedom Technique. And it helps you to completely shift and see yourself in a different light. And I'm going to be doing a forgiveness seminar this particular Saturday in New York. I'm going to have all of the details on my Facebook page. So many people have the wrong idea about forgiveness. They think that it actually means letting somebody off the hook. Oh, my gosh. It is not that at all. I struggled for years and years hating people and feeling like there was no way I could forgive them. But what was happening to me is that I kept on abusing myself with food and with body hatred and just feeling sorry for myself and accepting far beneath what I deserved. And I don't want to see you making the same mistake. So I want to offer this to you. And this is going to be a live seminar event. But it's going to transition and it's going to become an online opportunity as well, because forgiveness is such an important topic and everybody needs to avail themselves of it. So you can find out more about that and also the other program that I'm offering on my Facebook page. That's facebook.com/thejuicywoman. Now, guys, we are coming up on Father's Day, and for some women, that is an absolutely fabulous time, and they have beautiful memories of their dads, or they're incredibly close with them, and they share a beautiful, loving relationship. But there are others of us who feel that we don't have that same kind of connection. Either it's been lost through grieving for a dad who's passed away, or an estrangement, as in my case, or in other women's situations where they've been abused or feel abandoned or never even had a father at all. I have a teleseminar that I'm so deeply passionate about, and I'm going to be running it throughout the whole of the summer. It's called Mend Your Broken Heart, Make Peace with the Father-Daughter Divide. And it is to help you, if you're feeling the pain and you're feeling the hurt over missing your dad and feeling unwanted and unresolved, this is for you. Again, you can find the information on my Facebook page, facebook.com/thejuicywoman. I am so thrilled and delighted to be able to share this time with you and to share women who are amazing role models to teach you how to love yourself and your body more, because nothing is more important than loving and respecting yourself. Because when you love and respect yourself, you make choices and you make decisions based on that. and you don't settle, and you don't let people walk over you and treat you like a doormat, and you rock on in life. So I believe in you, Juicy Woman. Now, have an awesome, awesome week. Take care. Have a great day. Bye.